This is CyberPod EU, the European cybersecurity podcast powered by Sockwise.
It's the AI can be a weapon and it can be a blessing. Depends with which information do you nurture it. There's not such thing as too much security, but trying to over-secure sometimes don't really mean that you're doing your work too well.
Dear cyber listeners of Europe, welcome to the newest episode of CyberPod EU. I'm Greg Leshku, cybersecurity and lately AI enthusiast and practicing both. But now I'm responsible for raising the right questions to inform and entertain you. Today we have a really rare guest because Cristina Jovmir is the actual head of governmental CERT in Moldova. More closely meaning, she is leading the team of Cybersecurity Incident Response Service for governmental systems. Hello, Cristina. I'm happy that you're here. How are you?
Hello, thank you for having me today. I am very pleased, first of all, to get your invite on that. And it's an amazing opportunity for me to bring up to the table some discussions we had before and earlier. When I first heard of your podcast, I was very enthusiastic to search through it, and I listened to some of them. For me, it was amazing to receive your email with the invite. So thank you for this opportunity. It's really a pleasure to be today here.
Great, great. Okay, so that we are on the positive side. It's even though a Friday afternoon, so the work is mostly done, and we can turn to the weekend. First, I start with an introduction. If you do it yourself, I would be grateful for that, but I will tell some words afterwards about you because I think you're a very interesting person. Could you present yourself a bit?
Yes, my name is Cristina Jovmir. As you mentioned before, I'm holding the role of the representative of governmental CERT in Moldova. I'm having this position for more than a year now, but I work in the governmental sector for the incident response team since 2020. It's been a long way. I started as a project manager for developing the team. Then I become a security engineer on incident response. And now I'm leading the team that defines the ecosystem of what represents CERT with all its components, with the SOC team, the incident response, and the forensics laboratory in threat intel. I am a little bit an engineer, a little bit of manager, but I'm really enjoying doing cybersecurity in all these colorful aspects because I really have a great team together with me, and we are eager to keep the government safe. So we have a very big responsibility and goal that gives us the motivation to be better day by day.
It sounds amazing. Actually, I truly think that you are a perfect role model, if I may say so. I don't use this word too often, but I think that you are a woman, that you are, if I may say, young, very young, compared to the responsibility you take every day and your enthusiasm, your energy, which is just radiating if people is close to you, so I just find it amazing. And I could experience it on an IVLP trip that even when you are together or in a team of 20 older, let's say sometimes more experienced men, you can still take the lead at some points because you have fresh ideas and you have all the knowledge you need for that. So I feel blessed to have you in this podcast now, and I hope that that all the listeners and our audience will feel the same. And you represent Moldova in a critical situation, at least geopolitically nowadays, I think. So I think Moldova should be, and I'm pretty sure they are proud of you for this. And it's a very good occasion for us to talk about anything, I would say. So even technical aspects, even sometimes a bit of political, but more professional or regarding the procedures, regarding the organizations. I think we have a lot of things to discuss. What do you get this very often? I mean, that you are a role model, or do you like it at all that you are a woman and that people pretty often call the attention to this?
It's very interesting, because sometimes the biggest weakness someone can consider they held, in fact, it's also the biggest power they have. I was very lucky because of the posture of being a woman in tech when I first applied and learned at the university. I was offered to get advisory and support by professors, by experts, especially because I was considered a girl in an IT sector. So they were more open to listen to some questions that sometimes males in the system don't really get too much attention on that. So I was from the start encouraged to be in this field. So I never felt somehow overwhelmed or exhausted by the fact that I'm a woman in that case. On the contrary, I was meeting people that were still encouraging me and being able to share their struggles as engineers, and always supported and looked at me in the way that I'm an engineer, and that's all. There's never a she or a he before that word. It's just engineer. So in my path to the present that I represent today, I was just very lucky in people that I met. My journey was built upon amazing people all over the road. Sometimes they were very random people, even mathematicians, developers, sometimes information security representatives, that got an idea or two to me. And I just have a skill. I will say it was inborn opportunity to communicate easy with everyone. But people are very open when you want to learn something, and they will give you the right advice if you know to put the right question. For that, you need to learn. So it's a continuous process. First, you need to understand that nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. Second, you need to understand that you cannot think every time only that no one's perfect. You need to do something every day, step by step, to become a better version of yourself. You'll never achieve the perfection, but that doesn't mean that you need to stop somewhere. So the limit is just in your head. If you want something, just go knock on the right door, sometimes on the wrong door, but you'll get the advice where to search correctly. And the path will unfold in front of you day by day. So today what you see, and what I was very amazed to listen from how I look from the outside, it's in fact a result of a lot of people believing and trusting in my ability, sometimes more than I've did during the past years. So it's just a joint result. The thing that you see, it's in fact a result of an experiment of someone that just really badly wanted to stay in the country and work and have a good career. And it was possible, because one of the struggles in the developing countries in Europe, it's still having a career at home and building the society in the place that you was born and raised. So that was my main goal, to stay in the country, to work for my family, for my society. And it just happened. I just put some ideas in my head and just didn't give up. Continued to find who will have the answer for that. And in the places where I didn't find the answer, I've tried to become myself the person that can give that answer to others.
Thank you very much. I think this was very nice. These were very nice sentences sharing this success you already lived. Just some added information for those who may find your person a role to follow, that languages are very important, I think, and that kind of talent you have. I think that must be there to live such a career. So it's very nice. So we all know that since the aggression against the Ukraine, the situation based on the geographics of Moldova became really delicate. So I'm not sure how much you can uncover of the situation you are currently in your everyday role. But if you would tell us some words about the level of threats, the level of risks, how does it in the everyday look like? Because I think you have the possibility to gain experience like nobody else or very, very few people, even in the whole area of Europe.
Thank you for the question. The answer here, it will unfold in at least three aspects. First of one, it's like the global index, the global trend. So we are part of the internet and the digitalized world. So we're also a part of cyber threats that are emerging all over the globe. And we always will have the more systems will have access to the internet and the more structures and fields of development sectors will be connected to the World Wide Web will continuously increase their threats. And this proportion cannot be held by any measures. You need just to develop the security by design in your concept, in your mind, to once you develop the strategy and the system, to have the support of security in it. So that will be the first line of threats that we are facing as a country. The second one, it will be the collateral damage, I'll say so, because we are in the region at the conflict, and since our systems still communicate and we have different activities that involve regional cooperation with Ukraine, with the countries at the border, like Romania, Poland, European Union itself. Sometimes some of the activities that we face, some cyber threats that we face and can be attributed or associated with the conflicts that are in the Eastern Europe, is just a collateral damage that it happens because our society it's quite diverse. From the ethnical perspective, it like we have the more conservative part of the country. So sometimes there are disinformation campaigns that we are facing regarding the EU integration as general that are not really targeted only to the country. It's like the concept itself of the European Union as a different perspective of life, different values that the post-Soviet countries are. So it's more immersed, even it's an article on internet about the middle floor attack, which is very funny for us as speakers of Romanian because in English it was retranslated from the Russian word of средний класс. It's a word that it's usually associated with people that are from the average citizen that's not very that's socially not very wealthy, but it's also not very poor. So it's targeting the majority of citizens that live in a country. And that kind of attack, it's like a hybrid threat on disinformation with mass media and some information in the mail servers targeted for the domain names of the country that will bring sometimes spam information just on random topics about United States, European Union, even other ethnicities that are not really related to any other, say so, political interests. Sometimes are just massive campaigns of hate that's created just to make some noise, some lateral noise in the conflicts that are in the Eastern Europe raising. So sometimes it just happens that we're part of a much bigger campaign. And because of the language that we still have Russian speakers on the territory and that we still have some people that do have nostalgia on the values that represented the Soviet Union, there's still a space of manipulation in that way. So they're still trying. And the third one, it was, as it was published already in the media, we had elections. That become very popular in the previous fall. We had the presidential elections, and we also had the referendum that was deciding if we'll have the pro-European development and strategies. So it was a massive targeted campaign to try to meddle in the process and sovereignty of the elections. And it was diverse. It was DDoS attacks mainly. Some of them were phishing campaigns in attempts to get information about the government, about the structures. That were a lot of attempts that failed, but they were still needed to get registered, documented, analyzed. So sometimes it's not only the impact itself that we'll have as an incident that took place, but it's also the overwhelming amount of events that need to get registered, monitored, and redefined to understand what's the major threat for the citizens. So, yeah, it's a lot on the plate, but as I mentioned from the first point, we're still globally emerging in digitalization process and being part of the digital world, having the identity online, using the facilities that brings the e-commerce, the possibility to learn from the distance, to work remotely. So we cannot get a part of that development. We just need to adjust and to redefine our strategies just to keep the resilience.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a nice overview of your threats, of the threats you are facing the day to day. And I can tell you that you are holding up very well. Just if we bring here the example of Romania, and now they have to retake the elections. And I think you had same attempts, you had same issues in Moldova, but you somehow coped with it. And you succeeded in holding the elections. So congrats for that as well. Did you take your part in that? As far as I know, you did.
Yes, we as a governmental service were in charge with ensuring the infrastructure, governmental infrastructure that itself provided the availability of the all services that made possible the election process itself. So it was a big challenge because, you know, in cybersecurity, it's always a funny trick. You can have billions and thousands of wins during years and have just one fail, yeah, and it doesn't matter when, and you'll get discredited for the work that you have done well. So it's even more critical when there's a state's stake, and you're concerned about the security of some massive national processes. It's quite difficult to keep everything up and to keep the processes beside that to go well, because during the attacks, you don't need to concern only about the vector of attack itself. You need to understand that your whole infrastructure needs to have all the processes upgoing, and that the citizens don't feel any disturbance, and that all their services that are provided by the government are still up and running. So yeah, it's challenging, but as you mentioned, we deal it quite well, and that's only possible because we really have a lot of dedicated people that overwork themselves, because they know that they have values to protect, and they have a country to maintain, at a state that the children will grow here in sovereign, independent country. So the premise is high. The goal is high.
Yeah, I feel the enthusiasm through your words. As I just mentioned, you have the experience which people can rarely live. I mean, if you are, for instance, a soldier in the age of peace, you cannot practice really your profession. And unfortunately, fortunately, you have the chance to test your skills every day with your team, with technical and organizational measures you could have. And I felt it would be very useful for the audience if you could share some of your tricks, secrets, based on, for instance, the Pareto principle. What are the things you find the most effective in the defense or in your work? That can be even technology, even organizational, procedural, any kind of thing you think.
Yes, here I would say that there's no such thing as casualty. And it rarely happens that an event, a cyber event, pops up just randomly. If you see it only once, maybe you didn't set everything well to see it more than once, because the experience itself presents that the story unfolds way deeper every time an incident happens. So much more attention to things that not really trigger the alerts while working. In cybersecurity, the killer in the crowd usually a normal activity that happens while you are monitoring a process. The silent activity that exists in your system usually is the one that will trigger much more mess. So the vigilance, it's one of the things that we always talk about. If the human factor identifies that an activity seems off, sometimes it's the element that any AI can't explain. Usually we are setting our strategies, our filters, rules based on the things that we're learning from the machines. But the thing that I understood during the incident response and the forensic analysis is that there's not such a thing like intuition that machines have, but humans do. So institutional memory, work experience of people that monitor sometimes comes in handy, and it's the element that I think that AIs will never get it. So for those who say that we automized everything and now we have zero incidents and zero alerts, my advice will be, maybe you're doing something wrong. Just reassess, because the most comfortable moment for any worker in cybersecurity is the moment there is no alert or incident happening, but it's the most concerning one, because we live with so much data going in between, inbound and outbound, that even any alert that, like, one day without alerts, it's come on, even the systems don't work that well all the day.
Wow. Yeah, that's music to my ears, I would say. I hear daily, couple of times, from IT practitioners, not cybersecurity, of course, that we don't have any incidents. We don't have. So we're good. Thank you. And I just face the situation that that it's very difficult because if you see nothing, you should be very much worried. And yeah, but they don't feel it because they are not from this industry.
And again, it's not really a thing to judge because another things that I observed during the working process is because the institution I work in, it's not the typical type of cert someone will have. We were designated as the governmental cert because we are also a governmental provider for trusted services. We are internet service provider for the government, and we still provide the governmental cloud that connects all the systems and services. So it's much more behind. The team that we work in and we interact are also developers that usually don't do cybersecurity on their daily basis. Mm-hmm. So we gather a lot of experience because we understand that not every IT expert that works in the field speaks the language of cybersecurity, mm-hmm. and even less of them understand what they need to look for and where and how to report in case they understand that something's off. So we live in a very versatile moment now because everyone that starts business from scratch things about, I need a web platform where I'll sell. I need that kind of support system for that system for that. He starts to create its own universe of services and digitalizes a lot. The processes are automated. It's easy to, but very few of them, when they create that kind of requirements as product owners, ask for the element of cybersecurity in it. And developers, when they write their code or design their products, not all of them make this risk assessment. And it's another level of understanding that it's more than just a criteria when you create a product. It's more of a vision that we still need to develop because before there were a lot of products and that were under development and few security. Now, because of all the data that goes in between the systems, since the development is exponential, the cybersecurity itself needs to be even more because back in the days when I started to learn cybersecurity and information security in general, in 2015, everyone was talking about incident response and post-incident measures. Now, when we talk in every room about cybersecurity, we're like, we need to be proactive, preventive. It's even the change of mindset that it's not useful just to react after an impact had established. You need to think beforehand everything at the planning stage. So it's a very big change in a lot of products, and it costs a lot in the implementation because sometimes it needs more people, more resources. It's not that cost efficient. Usually security costs a lot.
Yes. But maybe in the long run it returns very well, and yes, maybe it's your secret as well. If I read your words the right way, you somehow combine your team. So you've got a very special fusioned cert in which there are people which are normally not sitting in a SOC room. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, we have people that work in a team with SOC, but they are developers. Mm-hmm. Because when we started at first to start hiring people as developers for security solutions, we understood that the real, real good developers don't really know anything about the workflow and the way an attack will happen and for what we are searching and how we are designing, what are the concerns. And now we have people that started to document by themselves how it should look, what will be the requirements of products. So that's why I'm saying that it's a continuous problem of learning. It's not such a thing that I've learned everything. It's something new every day. It happens also with zero-day vulnerabilities, with exploits. Sometimes it was even the change of threat landscape with all the combined attacks on critical infrastructures, on some elements that never, ever have someone thought that can be exploited for the viruses, for malware activity. And it happened. So it's a lot on the plate now. It's overwhelming for every country. It's without boundaries.
Definitely, definitely. You have mentioned AI once with a negative aspect, I would say. But, I just said in the beginning that I'm an enthusiast now because I think that we are standing in front of a huge change in the IT industry and overall in the world, I think, because of the new LLM methods and LLM solutions. Do you use any, what's your general opinion about these things right now, and what do you think when will it really change our work, in which term?
It's very interesting that you brought that to the table, because I don't really remember where I read on online, but it was a woman that mentioned that she wanted an AI that will work for her, so she has more time to do arts and to focus on the things that she likes, and not for AI to create art and stuff like that. So why I do identify myself as the one who mentioned that thought, I use AI for improving my response time, for keeping accountants of some long commands or texts that I am writing again and again, because it happens, a lot of activity happens on a daily basis. And it's like my secretary, I will say, not for sensitive information, because it's a concern of security that I don't really, it's not just only about the work that I have, it's just my personal opinion that there are subjects or topics that you'll never ask an AI, even if you're interested in, because asking him I don't know how to mention, maybe it's a she, maybe it's a them, not to be discriminant on how I can identify. But in the perspective, it's in handy to enhance your abilities that you already have, but the vigilance of understanding with what are you working is to understand the principles behind it. It's the AI can be a weapon, and it can be a blessing, depends with which information do you nurture it, because it's a machine learning process. And sometimes it can be part of a loop, because if you are using it as the only reliable source of informing and acknowledging something new, you'll get in the way that it's a machine learning process. So there are blind spots in it, and it's not that resilient as you want to think as a source of information. So we don't need to be too overwhelmed with enthusiasm on thinking that that's the main Wikipedia, or that's the new encyclopedia, or stuff like that. Know when and how to use it. I'm very into it, because it helped me a lot in different small perspective that I wanted to automize. It's quite in handy for the operation centers when you want to automize some answers that you'll get. When you work on scripts and you don't really want to stay and write all the words, but you know how a script needs to look like, and you can adjust it with it, and it will help you, and it will increase the capacity that you have with some extra help. But you always need to understand that you're learning a child in that perspective. You need to look at it as a product that you are building with your own hands. So everything that you put in, it will be never forgotten from the aspects of that you just brought some new abilities to it. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It depends on, again, I will repeat myself, on how well you understand what you are doing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the golden ratio of it. It won't be ever like the human being understanding of what's happening around. Like, you cannot be empathetic with it. You cannot have really, really like human reaction to that part because it's still a machine, even if it can be very close to that. But in some extent, it's a friend and an enemy. It depends on what are you watering it with.
Thank you. Okay, I appreciate your opinion. So I think it's now time to talk a bit about the article we are having in every podcast. So let's hear the headline of the week.
Headline of the week.
Now I summarize this article this week. It's about an EU-supported project in Moldova. So on the 31st of January, an EU-founded modern laboratory was inaugurated in Chisinau, Moldova, to help Moldovan law enforcement agencies in the fight against cybercrime. The laboratory's capabilities will enable enhanced digital investigations equipped with state-of-the-art infrastructure, tools, resources to exercise expertise to tackle the most complex cybersecurity challenges. The European Union provided 1.1 million euros in grant funding. The laboratory was opened under the EU for Security Moldova project funded by the European Union and implemented by CEPOL, the European Union Law Enforcement Training Agency. So this agency is dedicated to develop, implement and coordinate training for law enforcement officials, of which we know both some all over Europe. So what's your experience with these things in Moldova? What do you think about of this story?
I think the inauguration itself, it's a very crucial step for Moldova's cybersecurity landscape, especially for cybersecurity on the governmental level capabilities, because Ministry of Internal Affairs itself, it's a very big, large ministry with a lot of agencies and institutions, and they deal with matters of cybercrime. So there's a lot of people that needs to get the proper training to ensure the maturity level of the system itself. So for the government to provide that in Republic of Moldova, it's a real struggle and challenge. So the EU support this initiative will reinforce the country's commitment to enhance the cyber resilience, and the law enforcement with that kind of tool will be more trained to react and counteract. So the process of incidents that will happen in any of the structures that are under the Ministry of Interior or any activities that will involve law enforcement will grow. So it's better for all the critical sectors, because in that case they can even step in and support other sectors that are under development. Also, given the ecosystem that it's now in the Moldova, the laboratory will have a strong foundation for any kind of forensic analysis and proactive threat intel, will help people to understand what usually we are looking for during the cybercrime investigations, because it's very difficult to detach the elements that attribute activities and the threat intel very well, and to sanitize the information, but to bring it back to the ecosystem. So I'm looking forward to that, because the aspects of criminal cases that are usually from the governmental side escalated to the cybercrime unit because of the aspects that we are not in our area of law regulation, we are not allowed to work with that kind of activities. Sometimes we were struggling to have the threat intel back from that cases to learn from them in our systems and to have a preventive measure, some preventive activities to maintain the governmental ecosystem safer for that aspect. So I think it's a very, very good collaboration, and that support will be fruitful for years to come.
I'm happy for your opinion, and all this story was really one of the most positive things I lately heard of. And I think we already enlightened positive aspects of Moldova. I think it's a very nice, beautiful country, which really worth visiting. And I felt that if we have the chance to talk to each other within the CyberPod EU community, I would provide you the opportunity to speak about your country, let's say, freely, because lately we hear, I would say, too much negative things regarding the gas crisis going on because of what Russia is doing, unfortunately. And maybe the situation is absolutely not looking like we are reading in the newspapers. So would you like to share your opinion about this thing?
Yes, now I will speak on my personal view. Will detach from the role that I'll have as any kind of representative of the government, and will be my honest opinion on the situation, how it looks. First of all, as a disclaimer, my first studies are in economics, so I have a degree in economics, and I do know how microeconomy and the theory of economics work. So. Mm-hmm. Since in teenager years, I was learning about the financial processes, how the public budgeting is made, how the government works, the state works. So I'm saying that because of two reasons. First of all, it's all the massive negative information that we have on media and speaking about the crisis that's happening. It's very, very concerning. It's really very hard for citizens because it's very expensive. So that's why I'm bringing the economical perspective. We're living in a country that for the average citizen to pay their bill now for electricity and for the heating, for the gas, sometimes it will be like 3 or 4 monthly pays for just one, like the salary won't be enough to pay the checks. That's the concern and the problem that we face. And you cannot just close your eyes at that. On the second hand of that situation is that I'm having 30 years old. I'm the child of independence. I was born when my country became independent. But as I grew, I saw a lot of poverty. Mm-hmm. Because when you want independence, the biggest cause that you'll have to do is to have the nationality pride of wanting to be independent and sovereign in everything you do. Which means that it will pay, you'll need to pay the cost for that. After the Soviet period, Republic of Moldova, after independence, struggled since I remember. I remember how empty were the markets and how many people were struggling to live when I was a child. When I grew up and I was a teenager, there were better times just because a lot of people emigrated to European Union, even illegally, mm-hmm. and they got their bills and everything in place, and they had a better life just because they had the opportunity to work, especially in the European Union. The best salaries they got there and the first contracts, official contracts that people got were in fact in European Union. So a lot of teenagers and people in 2000s went abroad to study and to work. So we had a huge migration of young people outside the country. And that held the country all these years. That's the huge reality that we need to face, that it wasn't about some governance that went well. No, it was just about the diversity between how many people emigrated and sent back money to the country, to build the country. The things that changed now from the economical perspective, it's that people changed their mindset. Youngest people that left the country, they're not returning home. So they're not wanting anymore to pay and invest real estate. They don't come back and they don't make their payments in the system. So the generation is getting older and the economy itself grows based on the taxes. So it's just a system that kept to increase year by year. And it's not always only on the aspect of who won the elections or which governance it was. It's much more economics involved on the perspectives of life that brought Moldova today. And after COVID hit the country, as all the countries were affected, being in-house for Moldavian people that especially made their money from the services, from the HoReCa sector, for all the facilities and services they provided, it was a big collapse in economics. A lot of entrepreneurs closed their businesses, and it affected a lot the economics. After that, it was the conflict in Ukraine, which brought sometimes a lot of money and investment from Ukrainian refugees that wanted to build something closer to their home. But they provided a big challenge for entrepreneurs that were already in the country. So it somehow happened now that the conflicts and the hatred against the fact that we struggle from the financial perspective in the country and we have a huge gap in budget, it just grew year by year. It's not a thing that happened overnight. And that's why it's not a solution that will be implied today and tomorrow it will work as part of a healthy ecosystem. It will be a work of years and years when people will still be responsible to pay all the taxes, to declare all the things that from the financial perspective, from all the structures that we work in. It's not only the public sector, it's also the private, is the way that the commerce works. And with all the changes that we are seeing lately in the international cooperations and relationships that happen, it's even more a challenge. So I don't really know how much of the information and the media goes outside the country and for what reasons, but the reality is that it's not that bad. We still have a very big part of beautiful businesses with good people, with good experts that work in different fields, put a lot of effort, really make hard work, pay all the taxes, want to do the change, want to still live in the country and make some, but it will take time. And now is the moment when we, in fact, can make a huge difference, a deterrence between if we want to continue to develop the way we've did for the past years and be sovereign, independent, and feel free to be everything we want in our country as individuals and to develop, we need to keep the struggles a little bit more and just not to give up, because to see a good change, you'll need at least 5-10 years. When you change something small in country, to see the real result, you'll need a decade to see the result. And I think that's discouraging. That's the thing that people don't have patience enough. We had more than 20-something years of work, of hard work, that don't really got the wanted result. And we changed the perspective, but to see the results of it, it will again take a lot of time. We just don't need to give up on the dreams that we have.
Thank you. I think your example, the example of cybersecurity, this project, aided by EU, but of course it's also the interest of the EU that Moldova became or remained stable and also, as you said, independent and strong. And I think it's the interest of all the neighboring countries, even the interest of Europe. And I think that it's a valuable nation. You are very valuable people. So I'm really happy to have you here and discuss all the things. And it's very valid. You are telling that it such large systems need time to have the effects. Would you like to add something to this episode, Christina?
Well, I think I can add a thing or two. I would like to point to more ideas. First of all, I want to say that behind every success story, it's in fact a lot of failures behind. So even when we talk about big developed countries, if we talk about a sector that's growing and thriving, or we are talking about the person that we identify as a role model, in all the cases, there's a lot of struggles, failures, and moments when we've learned through difficulties and we've got the experience not because we had peaceful times and we had time to learn. On the contrary, we were driven by the willingness not to give up. So the message that I would like to emphasize, not only on the cyber perspective, but for every enthusiast that listens to the podcast and made it through all the podcast and still listens, it's that if you have a dream and you want to become someone, to achieve something in any aspect of your life, the only enemy you can have it's yourself giving up on your dream. As long as you'll keep doing even small steps, or at least not giving up every day, but still working on the processes, even if it will take time, you'll see the results. And if they're driven by, I will say, the right motives and sources, the result that you will get will be overwhelmingly good, and you'll be proud of yourself. The second one, it will be for all the fellows from cybersecurity. It's like a motto that I am having lately in my mind. It's there's not such thing as too much security, but trying to oversecure sometimes don't really means that you're doing your work too well. And I will explain why. After making getting the results, the statistics from the previous year, I understood that sometimes you need to let the events happen to learn from them. As you mentioned about the crises, the wars, the conflicts, funny thing, we understood that the best results we had in the team and in general in the sector, they were all driven by the fact that we were struggling, we were having crises, and we were under the pressure. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing to be always on crisis, but only letting things happen in the way they should and being able to learn the things that you're doing wrong will help you build the new, more resilient ecosystems, and to be able to learn, to listen. Mm-hmm. The ability to listen, even if you'll hear sometimes the craziest ideas in the room, let them be part of your world, because sometimes the craziest things can get the most interesting outcomes. So mm-hmm. Keep learning, keep trying, And yeah, there's no such thing as too much cybersecurity.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your words. This is very, very valuable again. So endurance, keep up, stay open, as you say. That's the very, very short, some words, summary. And yeah, again, I would talk to you for hours about these things. But for now, I think we will close this episode. So I'm very grateful for having you today.
Thank you very much for listening to me all this time. And it was really a pleasure. And I really hope that the listeners took an idea or two from everything that we spoke about, and wish you more fruitful discussions through your podcast. I will listen to them.
Thank you very much. Yes, and I think I just can ask the people, the audience, to just stay, get in contact with us, any of us, I would say. So I think we are both open persons. So if you have ideas, something to discuss on LinkedIn, wherever you find us on the web, I think you will find us easily. Dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Christina. I'd like to see your comments or suggestions. Find me on LinkedIn or through the Stockwise web page. And thank you all the listeners and for joining us. So stay secure and remember, prevention is the best, but detection is a must.
This was CyberPod EU, the European cybersecurity podcast powered by Stockwise.